Listen, Freach, that was a great night last night. Before we get to some of the other issues, that was a great night of hockey. And the best game, I think we're all on the same page about this one, Minnesota and Winnipeg. And I've looked at these two teams, and you're always interested in, you know, in border rivalries. Like, you know, Buffalo facing off against Toronto. We'll wait to see what we have with Seattle and Vancouver. You hope that thing erupts. And Winnipeg and Minnesota, at times, it's erupted, but only briefly. It hasn't been a sort of sustained rivalry between the two. I hope we're there now. Now that both of them are two really good, legitimate, high-end teams, flat out, full stop, Elliot, that was a game of the night last night.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And what an ending, too. I mean, I knew someone who wagered on that game. I knew someone last night who had a bet on the Jets to win and the Oilers plus a goal and a half or minus a goal and a half on the back-to-back with Anaheim. Yeah. And so he lost the Winnipeg game on the review that they got caught on the empty net goal. And then the way they got tied and they lost in overtime. And he was so mad, he just doubled down on his bet with Edmonton. And Anaheim scored, of course, with 17 seconds left to beat that one. So, you know, he didn't enjoy the night of hockey as much as you and I and most other people did.
That Winnipeg game
was exceptional.
Yeah. Is that person David Amber? And if so, boo-hoo, because his Florida Panthers beat my Tampa Bay Lightning for the in-season Stanley Cup.
Yes. Well, and you know what? He on Thursday night, he has Florida-Colorado. So he's
keeping two
the
teams.
Cup no matter what. Yeah. So this pool's a joke. Like, let's just say that. It was not Amber, although if you get Amber on the show, apparently he's on – quite a streak right now, which is not going very well. Yes,
he's the guy we hit up for lunch on Saturdays then?
No, it's the other way. He's going to be hitting us up for lunch. Yes.
Oh, he's got the elephant ears pockets.
mush amber. No, that game last night, it was unbelievable. And there were, as you said last night, like there were a lot of great games. The Edmonton game was fun to watch. The Minnesota Winnipeg game certainly was fun to watch, especially depending on, you know, what perspective you had on it. I thought there were a lot of really good games last night. A lot of entertaining ones.
Yeah, a lot of entertaining games. I mean, the Caps doubling up the Avalanche 6-3. Kuznetsov with 3 points. Tom Wilson with 3 points. Ovechkin scores again. I'm curious about Kuznetsov.
By the way, that Winnipeg game, were you watching the overtime?
Yes.
So when Lowry takes the puck out of their zone, and he's coming down the 2-on-1, and Talbot made a hell of a save.
Yeah,
are you sitting there thinking they better score because if they don't score here, they're about to lose?
Was that the play right before the 3-on-1 that ended it? Was it
that
rush?
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
I don't know that I
I'm sitting there and I'm saying, my God, they better score here because they're shorthanded, and if they don't score, they're losing at the other end. No, I didn't think it would be a Harlem Globetrotter style play that beat them, but I like the numbers for the Wild if they didn't make it.
Yeah, if they don't score there and the puck squirts free, you got a 3-on-0 going the other way and this thing is over. There's no way. But that's the thing about, like, there have been two great, I mean, the Maple Leafs overtime the other night against the Rangers was a great one. Artemi Panarin with the OT winner. Last night, Joel Eriksson-Ek with the third of his hat trick that ends it for Minnesota. Those are two, you know, back-to-back really good overtimes. And I really hope that we see more because, as we've talked about on the podcast before, overtimes just tend to be, in the past couple of seasons, slow neutral zone regroup OTs.
I worry that's going to happen as the season continues.
I think so, too. And right now it's just, all right, go for it, have fun. And then the coaches get their hooks into you, and all of a sudden it's, you know, okay, maybe
they ruin everything.
Chances in OT. Coaches ruin everything. You know who I blame? Yeah. You know who I blame, Elliot? Fred Shiro. You know why? I blame Fred Shiro.
I hate to tell you this, but Fred Shiro was dead like 20 years before 3-on-3 overtime came in, Jeff.
No, I'm talking about coaching in general. I blame Fred Shiro, who I still think goes down as one of the greatest coaches of all time. But he was the first to bring an assistant coach onto the bench in Mike Nikoluk. Mm-hmm. And now, how many coaches do you see on the bench, and how many coaches do you have up in press row? Like, it's every team has, you know, at times as many coaches as they do players. He started it all. Blame Fred Shiro.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. Noted. A couple of things I mentioned off the top. Right now, Sports Talk Radio in Montreal is on fire.
Yeah.
And the minute Montreal loses or they lose a lead or they drop a goal, two things start trending. Marc Bergevin and Patrick Roy. it's an automatic right now. I look at the Montreal Canadiens, and you look last night, they lose 5-0 to the San Jose Sharks to take nothing away from San Jose, who, to be quite honest with you, in the pair of games that I've seen them play, they're kind of a fun team to watch. Like, we had written them off. San Jose is kind of a fun team to watch here early on. I look at Montreal, and it seems rudderless. It seems directionless. Mm-hmm. It seems as if it's a combination of players that are both frustrated and disdainful, but it doesn't seem like there's anyone there that can grab the team. Like, bless yep. Brendan Gallagher. Bless him. Mm-hmm. But there doesn't seem, and this just may be the Shea Weber effect, no one that can grab the team and say, we're turning this around. That player doesn't exist right now for the Habs. Agree, disagree.
Well, agreed, because I think the player who could most do it is Price, and he's not there, right? You know, when you're going really badly, who stabilizes you? The goalie. You can win a game where you play poorly. Like, for example, last night, Chicago, New York. I know the Blackhawks lost, but that was the best game I'd seen them play this year, and Sorokin was unbelievable for the Islanders. That's a night where you say, thank you, goalie, and you get out of the building as fast as you can. And Price is the guy in Montreal who can do that. And you just don't have him right now. Like we've talked about this, Jeff. The identity that the Canadians had last year in the playoffs, Islanders light, where they caught fire at the right time. Yeah. You know, that's gone now. It's, you don't have Price. You don't have Weber, who's a huge part. You know, I mean, he's not a difference maker in the sense of the word, but I think he's a guy who calms things down because he's seen a lot as Edmondson. You remember when we interviewed Nick Suzuki for the podcast and they were down 3-1 to Toronto, yeah. Who was the guy that he said spoke up? Eric Staal, who's not there either. So they've lost a lot of their on and Deneau. I mean, like, again, watching the Kings, and I know the Kings lost last night a game. They'll be very upset that they lost. But Deneau, just what he does is he just takes the minutes that frees up other people to do things, right? Yeah, and they don't have any of that right now. So their structure is gone. Their backbone is gone. You're struggling for your identity. You get blown out of the building. You know, the crowd last night, even though those tickets might be sold, there's, you know, not everybody's going to the games. And I don't know if that's a Montreal thing or more like, you know, Pittsburgh's sellout streak ended last night. You know, the Leafs and the Raptors are having a tough time filling up here. I don't necessarily know if that's an apathy thing or a financial thing or I don't know how I feel about going into a full building thing in some of these places. Mm-hmm. But they're you know, the one thing, Jeff, I'm looking at, and this WA story, I mean, obviously it's an interesting story. The one thing I look at here is ever since Mark Bergevin said, we'll talk about my status at the end of the year. Do you think it's hard to believe in any way, shape, or form that Jeff Molson is thinking about a succession plan?
Yes, of course. Right now. If you have a general...
Only they know if there's a deal to be made there, right? Only
Bergevin and Molson?
Yes. Well, so if the answer is no, and it seems to be trending that way,
Don't you think
Molson's got to be thinking about it?
Another general manager? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, has there not already been an offer tabled to Mark Bergevin?
Yes, there has been.
And there's no indication that he's of any mind to sign it to extend himself there?
I heard, and I wrote a couple of weeks ago, that the Drury deal in New York has changed the landscape of what Bergevin feels he should be paid.
So you think it's just a matter of money with Bergevin in Montreal, not a matter of frustration? Because I'll be honest with you, like, you look at me, I know that position takes a toll on you, regardless of who you are, regardless of whatever market you're in. Does he not look like he's aged, you know, 20 years in 2 years?
Like a U.S. president?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I agree. Like but I think it's both. I think I do think it's very possible Mark Bergevin has said, I want a less stressful environment. I think that's why he's been so good when it comes to Drouin and Price, because he understands the microscope that everybody there is under. I think he's been very good about that kind of thing. And I've heard behind the scenes, he's been very good about that kind of thing. But I also think there's something to be said for, if I'm going to be under this environment, there's a salary that I feel that I'm worth, or I feel I should be in X spot in the pecking order.
I don't think money would be an issue for the Montreal Canadiens, do you?
It's not that I don't think money is necessarily an issue. I just think that, like, I don't know what Bergevin is asking for. Like, Drury's number is believed to be in the fours. I don't necessarily think Bergevin's even asking for that. I don't want anyone to say that. But I think what it means is it just lifts the bar a bit, right?
Yep. Okay, we're going to have more on this with Eric Engels in an hour or two, more on the Montreal situation. But you mentioned Chris Drury there a second ago, and he's got a situation on his hands right now with Vitali Kravtsov, who's a former first-round draft pick, refusing to report to AHL Hartford, the affiliate for the New York Rangers, wants to be traded. See, my curiosity in all of this is, you know, how does Chris Drury handle this? And, you know, when he was, you know, before he, you know, took over as the general manager of the Rangers, when he was running the American Hockey League, and like, there were players, you know, who asked for trades before, whether they be, you know, most notably, of course, Hartford, whether it was Ryan Gropp or Sean Day, Brandon Halverson, Ty Ronning, like, there were guys that asked, and essentially Drury just said, kick rocks. And, you know, these are my offers. This is what we're presenting to you. And if you don't like it, well, too bad. I've always gotten the impression that he is. And we saw this, you know, we saw this, although it would have been Jeff Corton. We saw this with Elias Anderson as well. Take your time. Don't rush into a trade. I don't know if it's different considering the player that we're talking about, who's a really dynamic and good player. But it's one thing to say, you know, forget it. We're not going to move you to Sean Day or to Ryan Gropp. It's another to say the same thing to Vitali Kravtsov. How do you see the dynamic here working between the general manager, the player, and the player's agent? Essentially, where's this heading?
You know, well, first of all, I think you have to understand the person in the chair. I dealt with Drury a bit as a player, and you know, I always found him to be quiet but confident. Sometimes I think we confuse quiet with weakness or lack of confidence. I think people make that mistake way too often. I think Drury, even though he's a quiet guy, is very confident in himself. And I think he sets a path and he goes on that path. And he's not afraid to do things that might be seen as unpopular. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference with this particular situation is that it's the first time he's really doing it in a really big chair publicly. Like, as you said, a lot of the times, like some of those situations you were talking about, Jeff, like I didn't even know about them.
They're AHL situations. I'm not going to Hartford. Okay, you're going to Maine. Like, okay.
Yeah. Like that. But the thing is, it doesn't mean that they're not important to the people involved. They just don't get the kind of attention that this is going to get, right?
Yeah.
So, This is going to be new for him. And you know, how does someone react? Like we just talked about Bergevin and how burned out that he's been at times, because you're on that seat and there's a fire every day. This is going to be different. Now, the Kravtsov thing. So we reported yesterday, Gerard Gallant called Kravtsov and asked him to come back.
Yeah.
Kravtsov's in Russia. I don't think he wants to stay there. I think he's going there because he's comfortable there. He'll skate, he'll work out, but I think he wants to play in the NHL. I don't think he wants to go over there anyway. Mm-hmm. But the thing I've heard, I think there's a lot of interest, Jeff, but I think the Rangers are saying, you know, like this is a first round pick 3 years ago. It's not going to be, we're not just giving him away.
Yeah.
We're not.
I
think he gets traded. I do. I think he gets traded.
I think he gets dealt too, but I don't think that Chris Drury is in any hurry to do so to accommodate the player. Like I spoke to someone today this morning.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And because I am curious to the point that I raised with you, I'm curious, you know, and I said to this person, like, what's Drury's style? Like, what can we expect here? And he said, one, he's big on fairness. He's no nonsense guy. doesn't want to waste time, and there's very little negotiating with him. He comes in, and to your point, he's confident, no nonsense. This is what I think is fair. This is what I think is right. There's a little bit of wiggle room up and down, but really doesn't have a whole lot of time for any big negotiations once he's made his mind up. To your point, like, this guy is a very confident executive. But to your other point, and I threw this back to this person I was talking to as well, like, this isn't like you're dealing with an American Hockey League player here. This is a first round pick who should probably be playing in the National Hockey League. It's different. It's a different kind of deal for Drew to make. And whether it's, you look at Kevin Adams and he knows that he's going to be, you know, married to this Jack Eichel deal whenever it happens, this is always going to be on his resume. I don't think the Kratzoff situation obviously is, you know, has that kind of gravity attached to it, like the Eichel deal, but this is still a big one. Like, this is still a big Ranger deal. This is still a huge one for a developing team.
I think the other thing too, Jeff, is that the two big personalities here, Drury and Kraftsoff, they can be very stubborn.
Yep, that's true.
So you get when you get that, because I'm stubborn. Like, I know myself. It's the best and worst thing about me is my stubbornness, because it gets me where I want to go in a lot of ways, but it also gets me into a lot of trouble because I'm just stupid sometimes.
Your words, not mine. There's a couple of things to get into from last day too, in the couple of minutes we have here left with you.
You want to do Vancouver?
I wanted to do both sides of it though. The Buffalo Sabres 3-0, they win 5-2. No Quinn Hughes for the Vancouver Canucks last night. For the first time in 13 seasons, the Buffalo Sabres are 3-0. Break up the Sabres. Your thoughts on both sides of things yesterday? I know that without Quinn Hughes, that Vancouver defense looks a lot different, but how did you see both sides last night?
Well, I mean, the thing that is amazing to me is Craig Anderson, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like there have been times in his career, like, there's been at least three times I can think of in his career where someone said to me, more than one person has said to me, that the guy is done. Like, and people love him because he's a fighter and a battler, and you know, we all know the family story, but they're just like, he can't do it anymore. And when Buffalo signed him this year, it was the same thing. It was like, I can't believe this. He's a great human, but he can't do it anymore. And he just continues to, like, he just continues to go. Like, to me, it's an incredible story. And I was really impressed with Cousins when we interviewed him at the media gathering. And he was just like, you know what? Like, I don't care about all the baggage and the negativity. Like, we're here to start our era. And he walks the walk. I like those guys. You know, the Vancouver situation, like, watching them last night, I always love to watch a team when a star player is missing. You know, how does everybody react? Like, Toronto without Matthews the first three games of the season. The Colorado Avalanche winning a Stanley Cup without Peter Forsberg in the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. They play that series against a really good Devils team, and, you know, Tongue goes to another level, and they find a way to win. And last night, I watched the Canucks without Hughes, and, you know, whatever they signed him for, it's not enough. It's just, when he's on the ice, so much goes through him. You can really see how different it is when he's not there. Like, their engine is just missing a very, very key cog without him.
The one player on the Buffalo side who's been exceptional so far, one of Terry Pegula's favorite players, I know there have been overtures before and they've never come close to moving him, to my knowledge, is Zemgus Girgensons. He's been outstanding. Again, this is a three-game audit here. Like, let's all calm down. Kyle Okposo looks really good as well.
Yeah.
But it's impressive. Like, we all expect the Buffalo Sabres to be in the Shane Wright sweepstakes, right? Pain for Shane. We all think that's coming for the Buffalo Sabres. But at least they're getting a little bit of a spark right now. Like, at least they're getting a little bit of a jolt. Like, and if there's any fan base that deserves something at this point,
those are great fans.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. Even other managers will tell you that. Like, oh, man, Buffalo fans are great. You know, like, these guys don't deserve this. How do you see the Chicago situation? I know that's a tough loss last for them. I mean, Sorokin was outstanding. Culleton on the hot seat. How do you read the Chicago situation right now?
Well, I mean, I missed the beginning of their game last night, and somebody said to me, go back and watch the introductions. And so I went back and I watched them, and I heard the booing. Mm-hmm. And it's not all on the coach. It never is. Unfortunately, you know, he's kind of the scapegoat right now. I thought Chicago played really hard last night. And that said a lot to me about their group. Like, they know what's going on. Those guys aren't stupid. And you can fold or you can play hard. And those guys played hard last night. Sorokin beat them. The thing that I'm really curious about, like, we've talked about, I thought attendance was going to be a really big story at the beginning of this season. And we're starting to get a feel for where things are. But in places where it's soft, and in Chicago, I understand it's a bit soft. I'm just wondering what that's going to force the decision-making on some of these teams. Like do owners or the business people look at this and say, if we don't do something, we're going to lose it here. Like, that's why, like, I'm looking at Montreal's crowd last night. And even though I'm assuming a lot of those tickets are sold, it's just, you're looking at that and saying, what does this mean if we don't do something?
The thing about, see, I don't know whether it's a COVID hesitancy, but the one thing that I've always maintained is the worst thing you can see is not fans that don't go, but fans that buy tickets and then don't go. That's the worst. That is the worst, because you paid your money and still you don't want to go.
Or you can't get somebody who wants to go.
Yeah, that to me is a significant sign of decline. Listen, we saw that in where do we see that? In Detroit. Right at the end of that, you know, Datsyuk Zetterberg era, you know, the tickets were paid for. They've just the fans just chose not to go because the team started their decline. That to me is always a dangerous signal. But I don't know if that's that. I don't know if that's the case here in Montreal.
But I think in Chicago it is a factor. Like, I've heard it, the sales are soft, and now you're 0-4, and you gave a good battle last night. You did, but. You know, this is a team, like, I don't like to say it felt like a huge game three games into the season, but that felt like a huge game for Chicago last night.
I'll tell you what.
0-3, all the money they spent, the trades they made, the way they started, the way they got blown out in the first 10 minutes in Colorado and Pittsburgh. Like, it just screamed, like, way too much is on the line early in the year.
You know what's going to seem like a big game? We'll end on this one, Fridge. You know what's going to seem like a huge game five games in?
What's
Carolina,
that?
Carolina, Montreal tomorrow.
Oh yeah,
with Kotkaniemi back in the building. Because
I'm
can
sure
see
the
script,
reactions
right?
will be perfectly tame.
You can see the script. Kotkaniemi goes off like 2 goals, 2 assists. It's a 6-2 final. Oh, it's just lining up that way. And you know all those players feel it. Okay, so listen, that was a fun night of hockey last night. We'll see what happens tonight. It's a pretty quiet night around the NHL, only a pair of games. But nonetheless, we'll stand by to see what action comes out of it. Thank you, Frege. You're free to leave now.
Thanks, Merrick. I'll speak to you tomorrow.